Today is Monday, September 8th, 2014, and once again I want to say hello to my students in front of me and to all those listening around the world. Today is the yard site of Dr. David Applebaum and his daughter Nava, and I want to dedicate the shayur / lecture in their memory. It's a wound that doesn't heal. It's 11 years. And probably some of you know who David was, Talmud Mufakar of Baron Soloveitchik, big Talmud Chacham, and a very innovative, dedicated emergency doctor. And David and I were intimate friends for under 30 years. He's married to a student of mine, Deborah Sparrow, and the story is just mind-boggling, the price we have paid to sit here and learn Torah, to sit in Eretz Yisrael after the Holocaust, to sit in Eretz Yisrael with every country in the world from America to Britain, subconsciously wishing that we were not here. The price we have paid at times is overwhelming. And as you know, David's daughter Nava, who I also knew very well, went to mikveh that night, supposed to get married the next day, and after she had gone to mikveh, she and David were murdered by Arab terrorists. Shem Yikom Damo. I'll be at the cemetery. There's a naskara at the cemetery tonight at 6:30. So Be'ezrat Hashem, my wife and I will be there. Now, just one additional word on how I began this year yesterday and letting off steam and the Satmu Ruv. I want to just say very simply, imagine if someone on the Chovevei Torah faculty had said that this Mishnah is not to believe, it never happened, the world would be in turmoil. The halls, I assume, unless I'm Reitz, the Rashi Yeshiva in Reitz would be hysterical. Rakefet would be flying in the air in Gris with anger. And I don't understand. The Satmar Rebbe said this, and he was questioned, and he held his ground. And Rakefet is the only one that's questioning it? Where is Rav Malkiel Kotler? Where is Lakewood? Look what Rabaran did in 42 on an issue that's much less sharp. And take a look what we have in 2014. Okay, I just want to find out. Am I the only one? Or am I overly sensitive? Let's see what the response is. Yes, yes.
Rav Menashe Klein and Rav Moshe said that this thing Yehuda Chassid wrote had to be afforded.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to deal with it. Yeah, yeah, no, I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to deal with it in my lectures, and I'm well aware of it. I have a lot of material on it. But first, let's see a response to the Satmar Rebbe. Okay, today's lecture, let me give a little background. I started teaching, the Kollel began a formal program, as I said yesterday, in 1978. In 1980, the fellows in the Kollel pleaded with me to teach one more class. At that time, I was really doing a lot of heavy teaching, and I just had a Tuesday afternoon opening, and I gave up my Tuesday afternoon and started a second class in the Kollel. And what they wanted for 22 years, I taught about the Rav, because already by 1980, the Rav Elo Aleinu was starting to fade. And for 22 years, I taught an ongoing Sheyurim on the Rav. Some of those Sheyurim are lost forever for the time being, because it's before there were recordings, before there was a YU website. And those were very powerful Sheyurim, where I actually redid some of the Rav's classic Sheyurim. Out of those Sheyurim, out of three of them, came the 600-page, two volumes, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph V. Soloveitchik. When I finished those 22 years, I then devoted 3 years to the history of Torah in modern times, redoing a one-year class I had developed in BMT and elsewhere. And then I spent 10 years on questions students have asked me. As we were finishing up 10 years on questions students asked me, two events happened that totally colored my thinking, my emotion, my health, my well-being. Number one, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein took ill and, as you know, minimized and then ultimately had to stop entirely teaching in Gris, teaching in the Gush. And with Reb Aaron's illness and then my mother's, Zichrona Livracha, my mother's death at the age of 98, I suddenly realized how old I am. Until Kol Zman you have a mother, and every morning you go to visit your mother, she lived in Givat Mordechai across the street from here, and your mother would say, Ani, how are you? You're a young kid again. With my mother's death and Reb Aaron, who I know as the babe since 1951 when I entered yeshiva, and that Reb Aaron shouldn't be able to teach. So 2 years ago, this is the third year, I decided for the first time in my life to teach something I know. Those of you familiar with Washington to Washington know the advice the Rav gave me, always teach what you don't know, that way you learn something and your students will learn ben kovacho. 2 years ago I decided I have to get this out of my system because unfortunately I don't know who else is left alive, if anyone who can teach this material knows this material, and at least if I get it out of my system, it's being recorded, it's being preserved. Some of you know I was at YU this past May, and I pleaded time and again to assign a doctorate on Reb Shmuel Belkin. And, you know, Rakep, it's a big shot when he's there. Everyone is coming to his shayurim, and everyone is acting nice to him and kind to him. And then when he gets back on the plane and goes back to Israel, you'll ask the big shots in YU, do you know Harav Rakefet? And I'll say, who, what, when, where, what's his name again? I can't hear well. How do you spell it? So I don't want to overstate the case. But nevertheless, I hope that someone is listening and one day all this will be written up and studied and researched beyond the humble words that I have to offer. Now, we did a lot of work on the history of Torah in America. We did a survey, what was before. The real year that Torah begins in America is 1886. 1886, as you all know, Eitz Chaim was organized, and where we're sitting today traces its direct history to Eitz Chaim Yeshiva in 1886. We went into the Rabbanim who came to America. We dealt with the Ritbar, with Rav Yaakov Yosef, with the Ritbars, and we dealt with Yeshiva University, or what today is Yeshiva University, as it expanded and as it took on major proportions. Now, I can't redo all the lectures, and I hope that Alan and Mark have gone through the YU website and know all the background to this. But Yeshiva University, and I use the word Yeshiva University anachronistically, it's not correct. At the time it was called Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. Yeshiva and Yeshiva College had two great individuals who were the anchors of all that was happening. Number one was Reb Dov Revel, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel, who was the man of great vision, established Talmudical Academy in 1915-1916, established the Smicha program in 1919. Yeshiva finally gave Smicha to five individuals who studied in America, didn't come from Europe with the knowledge, but studied in America. One of them was actually American born. I believe he was born in Pittsburgh. That was Saul B. Friedman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He was the first American born musmach of Yeshiva Reb Tzolchanan. Rabbi Rebbe was the great visionary who established Yeshiva College in 1928. But Rabbi Revel always suffered because people poked fun at the yeshiva, the European people who came, and we'll see this again either today or next week. The Europeisha people, the Europeans who came to the yeshiva and came from Europe, and they laughed, this is a yeshiva, what kind of yeshiva? The fellas learn 20 daf gemara a year. How much do they know? How much do they how much depth do they have? So Rabbi Revel always had a dream, and we spoke about this in great detail last year. Rabbi Revel had a dream to bring what makes a yeshiva, what makes Gris, why did you come to Gris? I would like to believe, I hope I'm right, That Grish has a unique faculty. That's what people tell me. It's a very, I often spoke in America this summer, so whenever people press me on Grish, I said it's the most multilithic institution in the world. And I used the example today that they had the tremendous demonstration against the Tzva Hagana Yisrael, the tremendous demonstration against the Vah Hashem Zu Halacha, a Mohammed Mitzvah, that everyone, there are no Pturim, even the Chatan V'Kala have to go out to fight, open Halacha, Perek Zayin, the Rambam, Hilchot Malachim, the Gemara in Saita. All right, what the Kala, I'll have Shirma on this, it's not for now. But this tremendous demonstration, what was it, 250,000 people participated. So it was very interesting. The Gris faculty, Rabbi David Miller went to the demonstration. Aaron Rakefer taught as normal, except Vic couldn't get here, Vic Grain. His name used to be different, but I heard rumors that one snow last winter got him so frightened, he's running to Florida for the heart of the winter. So he doesn't deserve the name Vic Snow, it's Vic Rain, plain and simple. My dear Vic, he couldn't get here because the demonstration, the buses stopped running. So I taught normally, said a few choice words at the start of Shir, quoted a certain Rambam that I just quoted, but I taught normally. Rabbi Bednash ran away because he was frightened he'll never get out of Yerushalayim, and afterwards he published a Pasquila for Purim against those who demonstrated that was second to none in its depth. Rabbi Bednash is a goon, you understand that. So he published something, wow. So if you need a more multilithic institution, then Gris Kola, Baruch Hashem. But what makes an institution? Why is Eli Wagner spending time in second year in Gris? All right, he came in Aliyah, etc. Third year already. God, a time. We first met in West Hempstead, as I recall. If you recall, didn't we meet in West Hempstead? Leave it for another time. So why is he spending a third year in Gris? Because it's the faculty. If not for a faculty, you can have Gris and Waldorf Astoria. But if you don't have good Reshi Yeshiva, unique Shayurim, you young people are in your 20s, in your 30s, you've heard every good Rebbe in the world already. So you got to have something special in Gris. This was Rabbi Rebel's dream. And September 1st, if you recall my talk in front of all the Gedolei of YU this past May, and I turned to Richard Joel and I said, do you celebrate September 1st? And he looked at me. September 1st, 1922 was the day that the whole shtanz of Torah changed in America. That's the day the boat docked and Rav Shlomo Palachek, the Maitre Tilui, got off the boat with one goal, to teach Torah in America. He didn't come to give drasha, he didn't come to raise funds, he didn't come to shnar, he came to teach Torah at what today is YU. This was Rabbi Revel's greatest achievement in the opinion of Aaron Rakefer. Because the Maitchit that came to America, the Maitre Tilui, I published about him, and it's in Rakefot Aharon, Chelik Aleph, I have a monograph on him. A lot of work. It could be a doctorate at Bernard Revel, who the Mechita was, and some of the Chidushim that have survived, put him into context, his background, his relationship with Rabbi Yehuda Leib Feuer, the Rav of Holyoke, his relationship with his Rebbe, Rabbi Chaim Briska. It's a world of material, but you have to have people interested in the history of Torah, interested in the honest history of Torah, not fairy tales. Halavai, we don't have Mazel, you understand. The right-wing world has Mazel. They publish books after books after books. I just purchased, someone wrote to me, I hope he's listening, that two volumes came out on a Baron Cutler. So I was walking in Gula, I saw the books, I can barely lift them. I don't know why they make such heavy covers today. So I threw out 100 shekel, 100 whatever it was, two books, 110, 120. I snuck them into the house. My wife shouldn't see because it's a problem in the house when you have thousands and thousands of books. Each one you bring in, you have to take one out. So I started, I'm reading it. Listen, I learned by Rabbi and I knew Rabbi Aaron. What can I do? I'm a sucker. Lie on top of lie on top of lie. And the worst lies are right at the start. They deal, you know, what we spoke about in class, Rabbaran's sister. We spoke about Rabbaran last year. Rabbaran's sister, I couldn't believe my eyes. The lies are right there in the first 10 pages, as if to say, Rakefet, you're an idiot, but we're letting you know we're publishing all the lies, whether you like it or not. But the history of Torah, the major decay. But Ein Mazal Yisrael, the Gemara in Shabbos, the Machir dies at the age of 55, osteomyelitis of the gum, which is cured today with one shot of antibiotics. Rabbi Revel was, of course, desperate. The Machir, what are you going to do now? And this is very important historically. Reb Shimon Shkof, you'll see why this is important. It plays into Rabbi Belkin as well. Reb Shimon Shkop, the Grodno Rosh Yeshiva, the Sharei Torah Rosh Yeshiva of Grodno, one of the preeminent Rosh Yeshiva of the pre-World War II generation, the famous Reb Shimon Shkop, was in America fundraising for Sharei Torah. Rabbi Revel, who knew Reb Shimon from Tells, because the only yeshiva that Rabbi Revel ever learned, and he was not a didactic, he was a gong. He spent one semester, they say, in Tells, and that was it. He couldn't fit into a regular schedule. Many gonim can't fit into a normal schedule. So he knew Reb Shimon from Tells. He pleaded with Reb Shimon, stay in America, I'll give you $10,000 a year. And Reb Shimon, out of 10,000, sent 6,000-7,000 to Grodno, which was a tremendous sum of money at the time. And that way, you can teach at YU, and Grodno will have money. And Reb Shimon accepted. I actually have a copy of the contract in my files. Reb Shimon signed. He had students in America who were very prominent medical doctors, lawyers, went through the contract, approved it. And Reb Shimon is very broad. Don't believe any propaganda. He was very happy that year in Yeshiva Reb Tzichol Chanan. And if you don't believe what I'm telling you, pictures from that period don't lie. We didn't have computers. We couldn't do photo montages. And I don't recall in all the volumes, but I know that in that wonderful volume, Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy, of which a fourth edition has just appeared, and there'll be a book launch at the OU right after Sukkot for Revel and Silva. In that volume, there is a picture of Reb Shimon sitting in front of the new building when they enter it in 1929, the Chag HaSmicha 29. There is Reb Shimon Shkop. There are two pictures. He is right in the center. He is the focal point. But what happened with Reb Shimon, and again, I went into detail last year, I just have to say it very briefly now. 1929, he goes back to Europe. So much has been written why he went back to Europe. He didn't like YU, he didn't like this, he didn't like that. All totally false. The reason he went back to Europe, Reb Shmuel Belkin saw the letter, Reb Shimon showed it to him. It's very simple. Grodno was left in the hands of Reb Shimon Shkop's son and Reb Shimon Shkop's son-in-law, Reb Feivel Hindus. They were not Reb Shimon. The students weren't that happy with them. You had plenty of choice in Europe. There was Slabodka, there was Mir, there was Panovich, there was Tells. All right, Tells was for the more enlightened. It was considered the most liberal of the year. It's hard to believe, considering what became of Tells and Wycliffe. But Tells in Europe had a division for women, and it had organized, it had a high school, a gymnasium. I mean, this was unheard of in the other Litvish yeshiva. But you had plenty of choice. Grodno was falling apart. So the Chafetz Chaim and Reb Chaim Moysa, Reb Chaim Moysa and the Chafetz Chaim wrote to Reb Shimon, you must return or your yeshiva is falling apart without you. Forget about the money. And Reb Shimon went back, but he gave Rabbi Revel advice that Reb Moshe Soloveitchik is looking for a position. He is unhappy. And Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, the oldest son of Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Moshe, married to Rebbetzin Pesha Feinstein of Pruzhana, Her father, Reb Elia Feinstein, was Pujana Rav. Her first cousin was Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe had come a long way. He came from a family that was not only anti-Zionist, was anti-Agudat Yisrael, and totally opposed. And here Reb Moshe winds up after World War I, when he has to run away to save his life from Haslovich, smuggled over the border in the middle of the night to Poland. He had been rubbing Haslovich, and Reb Moshe winds up teaching in a Mizrahi institution, Tach Kamoni, in Warsaw. But Reb Moshe had problems there. And one of the problems, a problem that I lectured on in America, and it's a classic problem, the conflict between, I've lectured in the Kollel years ago, and I did the history of Torah in modern times. It's a problem, maybe we'll come back to it one day. It's a classic problem. Traditional learning, what I call Talmud Torah, as practiced throughout the generations, and Chochmat Yisrael, Wissenschaft, as Judentum. It was an ongoing clash. It's like taking Mori Rebbe, the Rav, and sitting him here, and sitting Professor Avraham Weiss of Bernard Rebel Graduate School, brother-in-law of Professor Hanoch Albeck, sitting Professor Weiss here, and saying, Rebbe, give us a shiur on the first perek in Kedushin. Okay, Ha'isha Nikneis, B'shloshet, etc. And then turning to Rav Avraham Weiss, Professor Weiss, give us a shiur on the first perek in Kedushin. Gentlemen, they went on and on for one full year. There was not one word they said in common. Even when they read the Gemara, the Rav read a traditional Gemara. Professor Weiss pasted up, go to his published writings, a whole different chronological order of the Gemara, according to when the Amoraim lived, who said what, who came first, who came afterwards, how did the halacha become what it was, what did each generation have to say? Two different worlds. You should know, if I gave you the example, Mori Rebbe sit here, and his cousin by marriage, Professor Shaul Lieberman of the seminary, it wouldn't be as sharp a difference as between Reb Avraham Weiss and Mori Rebbe. Those of you who know what I'm saying, the depth of what I just said, because Professor Lieberman, he was criticized at times. He was too yeshivas. He wasn't pure scholarship. You have to understand that Shaul Lieberman was the Chazon Ish's first cousin. And the Chazon Ish, he once wrote to the Chazon Ish looking for a source. And the Chazon Ish writes back to him, you're asking me, you're the biggest bucky in this generation. So you see, Professor Liebman, yes, Chochmat Yisrael, Greek, Latin, secondary literature, what the man knew was indescribable. Ask a Baron Lichtenstein that he knew Professor Liebman very well. Or ask Rav Chaim Soloveitchik to describe the Grach, Dr. Grach as he called him. They'll tell you who Professor Liebman was. They knew him very well. I knew him from afar, but I didn't know him intimately. They knew him very well, his family, etc. But my example of Professor Weiss and Mori Rebbe is classic. You can't do better than that. Okay, you should know about Professor Weiss's family. He got married very late. He married one of his students. She saved his life. He was a member of the Judenrat in Warsaw, and she forced him to leave, and how they got out in 1940-41, the miracles to Spain, to Portugal, how they finally got to America. And in America, he wound up in Bernard Rebel Graduate School. I don't know how many great students he had, but Professor Feldblum, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, is the classic example of the top student, Professor Meir Simcha Feldblum, of first Rav Soloveitchik, and then as the Rav cried, Professor Weiss hat them from mir gegangen. Professor Weiss robbed them from me. You follow? And he's the classic example. Three children raised in the Bronx, the same Bronx that I grew up in. All three children and all the descendants of Professor Avraham Weiss live al atmat HaKodesh, kulam shomrei Torah u'mitzvot. And by today already must be 30, 40, 50 direct descendants, if not more. So I will always say about Professor Avraham Weiss, he was doing something right. Now, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik had big machloikasim with the leading member, the dean of Tachkamoni in Warsaw, named Professor Meir Balaban. And they had head-on machloket. You can read about it in Reb Moshe's daughter's memoir in the Shulamit Meiselman, the Soloveitchik heritage. She writes about, I knew all about this. I knew all about this already from Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. But she writes about it, the machloket, and he was anxious to get out. He couldn't handle it already. And he was now willing to come to America. After World War I, he was invited to come, and he was not interested. But after a few years, then the Rebbetzin was pressing him, and Reb Moshe comes to America. And that's why I'm sitting here. Reb Moshe comes, the family joins him, and I had the privilege of studying with all three sons of Reb Moshe, Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, my professor of chemistry, and the man who taught me all the anecdotes about the Soloveitchik family, Professor Shmuel or Samuel Soloveitchik, and my Rebbe friend, colleague, who I had so many discussions with. He was, what a zissa individual, Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, and this, of course, is Talmud Mufak, to whom we dedicate today's shiur. So, let me just say one more word, then I'm ready to begin. I just brought them up to date, 2 years worth of work in 20 minutes. One more word, then I'll take questions. Gentlemen, we have no mazel. Jews have no mazel. Maybe when Mashiach comes, we'll have real mazel. We don't have mazel. The Machiach to die young. Everything is going great for the yeshiva. They survived the depression. There's money again. It's filled with students. December 2nd, 1940, Rabbi Revel dies. 6 weeks later, 7 weeks later, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik dies suddenly. Overnight, the yeshiva is wiped out. And you have to understand, Alan, it's different than today. Today, if I were to ask you, who is the focal figure in Yeshiva University? You can't give an answer. You'll say, all right, President Richard Joe. But he's not the focal figure, he's the president. Who's the Rosh Yeshiva? So you'll say, Rav Heschel Shechter. All right, there's no question, he's an important Rosh Yeshiva. He's not the only one. You'll ask someone else to tell you Rav Michael Rosenzweig. You'll ask someone else who'll tell you Rav Mordechai Wolf, Rav Meir Tversky. It's good and bad. You understand? It's good because I'm the greatest believer of pluralistic education. A child, you can't force him into a straitjacket. You know my viewpoint. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I can't do any better than the Rav. You have to be individuals. The Rav used to scream at us, don't do what I do because I do it. Only do it if you think I'm correct. And then when you ask the Rav, Rebbe, should I sit or stand $5 after he gave us 4.5 hour shiur, that the only way to be Yotzei Avdolah is by sitting, and I have all the lumnas, I don't have time for it now. I think I did it in the Kollel 40 years ago, 35 years ago. I wish I had time to redo those shiurim, because they shouldn't be lost to posterity. So the Rav would say, do whatever your father does, you understand? What can you do? So you stand $5, your father stood, Kiddush. Who stands for Kiddush? It goes against all common sense. All right, so Tysus, do what your father does. What can I tell you? I stand for Bayuchulu, Eidot, and the Mishnah Berurah brings, and then I sit for the rest of Kiddush. I believe that's what the Rav did as well. Havdalah, until today, no one can tell you for sure what the Rav did. I can swear I saw the Rav sit when he stayed for Shabbos at YU. But others say, no, he stood, even though he felt you should be sitting, but his father stood. But you see, today, some wise guy will say to you, ah, the focal figure in YU is Rav David Miller in Gris Kollel. You understand? You don't have, this place is big, it's large. It may be the yeshiva is too large. I hold that yeshiva shouldn't have more than 400 or 500 students divided into 10 different yeshivas. But all right, that's Rakefet's viewpoint. Maybe he's wrong, maybe he's right, doesn't matter. But the yeshiva is large. 40, 41, December, January, Rabbi Revel dies. Rabbi Soloveitchik dies. The yeshiva was shattered. This was the yeshiva. This was the heart. These were the kidneys of the yeshiva. These were the lungs of the yeshiva. This was the backbone of the yeshiva. This was the spinal cord of the yeshiva. And within 6 weeks, they're gone. Yes, Nachum.
I just want to clear up. The Dean of Tachmon, he was in favor of Chachmas Yisrael?
Yeah, Professor Meir Balaban, he had series. This is a replay of Zeitlin. In the late 30s, I write about it in Revel, where Rav Moshe Soloveitchik tells Rabbi Revel he's not coming to graduation, he's going to put the yeshiva in Cherem if Rabbi Revel does not get rid of Solomon Zeitlin. Okay? Yitzchak studied with Solomon Zeitlin. Let him speak about Zeitlin. Was he an Apikoros or wasn't he? What do you think? No? Did he observe Shabbos? Was he what?
Yeah.
He observed the Shomer Shabbos. Okay.
Say that. He had very weird ideas.
Weird ideas. Okay. Listen, you want to know the truth? You can check it out in an early edition of Tradition.
Any idea he had footnotes?
No, I
understand. He had source.
And did you ever see there was an article by Rabbi Dr. Sidney B. Honig under his own name? You know, he wrote under pseudonyms Honig. What's Honig in Yiddish? Dvash, sweet, right? So if you see an article by Dvash, it's Sidney B. Honig. He has an article in early Tradition that originally they observed Shabbos every other week. I don't know where he got it from, with footnotes, the works. So I remember, I already knew a little bit at that day. You know, I was a young kid, but you remember, I was a hotshot as a kid. I had a good mind. A kid has a good mind. Halavai today I would have the mind I had when I was in my late teens, early 20s. So I said about Sidney B. Honig, who I knew very well. He was the Rav of the Young Israel of Williamsburg. You're dealing he was a professor at Bernard Revel, the Talmud of Solomon Zeitlin. So I said, either this is a new form of apikoursis that's so shocking, no one comments on it, or he's a Talmud of Zeitlin, so everyone says new Zeitlin's Talmudim can have theories that are way out, no one's going to comment. But you're absolutely right, Solomon Zeitlin had many theories. By the way, his students who are still alive tell me every last one of his outlandish theories have been proven more or less correct. As much as you can say in scholarship to be correct, they say more or less correct. Anyway, that was Solomon Zeitlin, that was Reb Moshe, that was the argument Rabbi Polayev, if you remember, Reb Moshe Aaron Polayev told me about the argument. And he says, "Mim shein ungetan the big day kahuna." You know what that means? That we already put on the big day kahuna, the graduation gowns. We were marching. We were faculty. And there is Reb Moshe Soloveitchik taking on Reb Dov Revel over Solomon Zeitlin. Go back 10 years earlier. There is Reb Moshe Soloveitchik taking on Reb Meir Balaban. And he had to get out because Professor Balaban was the boss. He was the dean.
So what year did you
When Reb Shimon Shkuf told Rabbi Revel about Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, it was 1929. So Rabbi Revel immediately started the process to bring in Reb Moshe Soloveitchik to America. Then he ran into an anti-Semite in the consul or the embassy in Warsaw the person that had to give him the visa, and here he's being requested. He's a non-quota immigrant visa, being requested by Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. Reb Moshe had had an ingrown toenail operation, which I had about four times in my life. You have a tendency towards it. So this anti-Semite said it's a serious operation, and we cannot give you a visa until you're totally healed. So Reb Moshe, instead of getting to the yeshiva in time for Elul, reaches the yeshiva December 29. His first shiur is the last week of December 29. His family doesn't join him 2 months later. And that's the famous story with Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, that Reb Moshe left his youngest son in the hands of Reb Yitzchak Kuttner. He told Rav Kuttner, teach my son, I don't know when I'll see him again. And that's the story with Aaron Soloveitchik, that he celebrated his bar mitzvah in Warsaw. There was nothing with nothing. He was called up to the Torah on Thursday, and that was the whole bar mitzvah. His father was in America, no big celebration, Aliyah the Torah, and that was it. Then the family joined him, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik goes to Talmudical Academy, goes to Yeshiva College, and from the day he arrived in America, he sat in his father's class for the next 10 years approximately. Okay? So he never had any other Rebbe outside of his father. Unlike the Rav, who had his father, then was exposed to Reb Chaim Hella, to other Gedolei Yisrael, Reb Aaron's entire education was via his father, and this is why Reb Aaron Lichtenstein has such derech eretz for Reb Aaron, for his uncle, his wife's uncle, because Reb Aaron was self-made gadol. Entire ability to understand every taisvus with shinim and depth, and that was accomplished in Washington Heights in the United States. The Rav, after all, Reb Chaim, Briz, Prushana, Reb Elia, Reb Moshe, Haslovich, Berlin, Reb Chaim Hella, and Reb Aaron, Washington Heights, where Yitzchak and I walked daily in our college years. Yitzchak didn't go to high school there. He's a Maimonides graduate. But I went there 51. I walked daily until today, Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, and now, tremendous problems develop. Agudas Yisrael, not Agudas Yisrael, Agudat HaRabbanim, Agudas Yisrael didn't exist yet in America. Agudat HaRabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis, the European rabbis, wanted to take over the yeshiva, wanted to make the Rav, the Rosh Yeshiva, take the place of his father. All hell broke out. Hell, pshuto kamashma'o. We spoke about it in our last lecture. The students got involved, and students can be very extreme. And the students accused Rabbi Soloveitchik of being a member of Agudas HaRabbanim, of giving phony hechsherim, of taking money. Every accusation that was made against the Agudas HaRabbanim by the American element was made against the Rav. Yomo? Just push it in. Every accusation that was made against the Agudas HaRabbanim was made against the Rav. Published in Commentator. The Rav's family was decimated. Couldn't believe it. His sister later wrote that these accusations hastened the death of his father, Reb Moshe. You'll see it in the Soloveitchik heritage. Finally, b'diavad, the Lubavitcher Rebbe stepped in, according to Dr. Grach, and a good friend of mine named, with a hyphenated last name, published an article in Jewish Action that just appeared on the Rav and the Rebbe. And if you're familiar with the article, my good friend says that the Lubavitcher Rebbe's support of the Rav swung the Board of Trustees in his favor, and he was elected for 1 year to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and at the end of the year they will reevaluate his position. Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein was the one chosen to deliver the message, to negotiate with the Rav, and thank God the Rav accepted despite the insult. And let it be said for the record that 1 year later, 10 years later, 40 years later, they never met again to discuss the Rav's contract as Rosh Yeshiva. But at that time, to be Rosh Yeshiva was not the prize, was not the crown, was not the key, was not the jewel, the diamond. It was the presidency. Because the president was Nasi and the former Rosh Yeshiva. And you have to remember that Rabbi Revel gave a shiur. He didn't stop teaching. He was president and Rosh Yeshiva in the full sense of the word. And now the battle began. Who will succeed Rabbi Revel as the Rosh Yeshiva and president? Now, let me say a few words about youth. To have an ego is very important. If you don't have an ego, you will not achieve in life. I achieved very little in life on a certain level because some of you know, I've said it more than once, I write about it in Washington in my first rabbinate in Ballard-Kingwood Lower Merion Synagogue, Pennsylvania. My ego was knocked out of me. Total knockout. So that's good. It's also bad. You have to have an ego. Let me tell you a little story with the Rav, with Maria Rebbe and his court photographer, my dear friend Rabbi Erwin Alpert, known as Roy Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. If you didn't know Roy, you're missing something in life. So Roy, at one rabbinic convention in the 70s, said to Rebbe he'd like to make a little display of pictures he's taking of the Rav. And the Rav said, what do you need? It's a Narishkeit. And the Rav said no. About 20 minutes later, the Rav says, Rabbi Albert, you know, a person needs a little ego. Go ahead, put up the pictures. And Roy was the happiest guy in the world. The Rav allowed him to put up the pictures. Now, there were many top people who dreamt of becoming president and Rosh HaYeshiva. You have to have an ego. One of them was Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. We spoke about this in great length last term. When you look back, you think to yourself, was the Rav crazy? Presidency, the responsibility, the fundraising, the aggravation. Mali Litzarazu. Or as Rav Gustman said, Rav Yisrael Zev Gustman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, one of the greatest Lamdanim post-World War II at Lubavitch he taught and had a yeshiva in America. Ramelis continued the Vilna yeshiva where he taught in Vilna before the Holocaust. Came to Yerushalayim, I believe, 71, Rehov Ramban, that Rav Gustman. David Applebaum used to go to Rav Gustman's Sheyurim after learning by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik for so many years. What a crowd would come. And Rav Gustman was offered Rosh Yeshivaship in Panovich. And Rav Gustman gave the classic answer, Ich will nicht die Kavod und ich will nicht die Akmas Nefesh. I don't want the honor and I don't want the Akmas Nefesh. That's an answer you give when you're older. When you're young, you have an ego, yet you want to achieve. What a title, imagine, what a story. The Rav comes to America, a greenhorn, 1932. Speaks English with an accent. PhD from Berlin University. An Einikul of Rav Chaim Brisker. And the Rav comes to America and look what he achieves within a decade. President Rosh HaYeshiva of Yeshivas, Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Yeshiva and Yeshiva College. He was one candidate. There was another candidate. Rabbi Dr. Leo Young. You said you're from the Upper West Side. the Jewish center. Rabbi Young, the legendary builder, rabbi, Jewish center, a man who represented all that was great originally in German Orthodoxy, in Hungarian Orthodoxy, in English Orthodoxy, where he was raised, formative years, his father, Tzvi Young, Meir Tzvi Young, described his life. Jewish center, a bastion of support for what is today Yeshiva University. Rabbi Young, who published as many books as Rabbi Young. And these were all handwritten by him. It's not like today that you have ghost writers, you have people assisting, putting out volumes, putting out scholarship, taking notes and working them into books. You see, Rabbi Lamb, all his sermons are coming out, but it's being done by his staff. Rabbi Young, what a world of publication. What dignity. How does it go? Righteousness, reverence, and rachmanut.
Three
R's. And the way he would say it with his English accent, oh, wow. He was the second candidate. And these were the two main candidates. And there was a lot of rivalry, a lot of, unfortunately, humans are humans. It's unfortunate. The Musa movement, as Rakefet has said 1,000 times over, the Musa movement failed as a mass movement. Chassidus conquered the world. Because Chassidus, with all due respect, you can be a chassid on a level of a tzaddik, or you can be a chassid. I told you when I once pushed into my way up front in Lubavitch, I wanted to be near the Rebbe. A guy turned around with a beard down to his pupik, with the black clothes, with a gartel, and he cursed me out with every English curse word you can imagine. He probably was a sailor who became a Baal Tshuva. Walked the streets of New York. I can't repeat to you what every second or third word is. Just listen to the way people speak to each other. There's dash them. It's unbelievable. And that same guy, you teach him, all right, he's a Shomer Shabbos. He dresses in black. He drinks the L'chaim. I'm not being cynical. I'm being insightful. Then there's a chassid like Rav Shlomo Zalman Zevin. Like Rabbi Yosef Shlomo Yosef Zevin, right? What's this? I'm still on the gig. Shlomo Yosef, do I have it right? Okay. Rab Zevin was a Lubavitch. Rab Menachem Mendel Kasher was a Gera. Rab Menachem Zemba was a Chassid. Rab Meir Shapiro, the Lublin Rav, the Daf Yomi was a Chassid. All right, my Litvish mind, I have to be honest. I'm a Litvak, I live as a Litvak, I will die as a Litvak. All right, I'm a little bit more open-minded than I was when I was a little Litvak. Now an older Litvak, a little bit more seichel, that you understand, right? But I could never be a chassid. I can't believe people blog in when they quote me in some blog and I speak nicely of Lubavitch, etc. Why don't I drink a L'chaim? Why don't they be Makarvi? They don't understand. I'm a Litvak. I could never be a Chassid. But Chassid has reached out to millions and millions of Jews since Chassid began. Tens of millions of Jews have been Chassidim. Today in the world, you have to have hundreds of thousands of chassidim. Pshutom kamashma'o. Look, Ger, look, Bells, look, Vishnitz. Look in America, Bava. Look in America, Satma, Lubavitch. What are we talking about? The Musa movement. In order to be a Musanik, there's no easy way to be a Musanik. Mindav sein an ois abata mensch. How do you translate that? I don't know.
Person who works on himself.
You have to perfect yourself. I have cases, people don't talk to each other, people are mad, family problems. I say, look at me. I never fought with anyone. People can spit in my face. So what? They're human beings. I'll walk away. I'll laugh. I'll wipe my. I'll give Sam Levinson 2 cents plain, if you know what I'm talking about. This generation, Sam Levinson. You don't remember the high school teacher, the Jewish guy, became a comedian, and his best book was for 2 cents plain. That if someone spits at you, you pay them 2 cents for the seltzer. It was ingenious what he said. You don't get upset. You don't get upset. A musenik. You take your whole gestalt. You're in Evit Hashem. God is with you at every minute. You try to do the best. You try to be sincere. This is musa. And if you're a musenik, you don't sling mud. You don't speak lashon hara about someone else. You don't put someone else down. You're not critical. You know, in our world, if you open up the blogs, I've said already 1,000 times over, my students in Gris Kolel a few years ago taught me to use a computer. I can say that nemana. They say pornography. I've never seen pornography. They say ikveis murder, violence. I've never seen murder, violence. But lashon hara, rechilat, wow. Just go to the religious blogs, the Haredi blogs. Wow. It burns your eyes. It's unbelievable. And these are from people. So you see, when that battle for the presidency began, there was so much mud slinging, you have no idea. And I end off with everything I said last year. I'm in a minute ready to begin this term. One little quote that I still heard when I came into yeshiva in 51. And the old timers used to talk about the bitter election campaign in 41 and 42. Rabbi Young versus Rabbi Soloveitchik. And to put it in a very popular fashion, they used to say, if Rabbi Young is elected, there'll be no yeshiva. And if Rabbi Soloveitchik is elected, there'll be no college. And let me tell you, they were so wrong, you have no idea. But on a popular level, Rabbi Young, they attacked him. They canished Lenin. What does he learn? He's not a Lithuanian. He never learned with the Chaim Brisker. Doesn't know what the Brisker Derech is. He's a Yekka. He's a scientific scholar. What does he know about a yeshiva? The Rav, what does he know about college? He's a member of the Agudas HaRabbanim. He hangs out with all these big beards, with all these backward rabbis, without all these outlandish rabbis. He's involved in Hechsherim and Fakerai. There'll never be a college left that we can be proud of. And the truth is that they canceled each other out. Half the balabatim of the yeshiva were in favor of Rabbi Young. And half the balabatim were in favor of Rabbi Soloveitchik. And there was an absolute stalemate. My dear students, the new semester now begins. Yes, Nachum.
Was the Rav already Rosh
Yeshiva? Yeah, he was saying Yeshiva, but he's not the Rosh Yeshiva. It's like today, Rabbi Shachter and Rabbi Rosenzweig, there was a move underway. I don't know how many of you are aware of this. There was a move underway in the Board of Trustees of Yeshivas Bishol Chanan to declare them the official Rosh Yeshiva. Because there's no Rosh Yeshiva today, Rabbi. Dr. Joel, President Joel, can be the best president in the world, but I don't think we can make him Rosh Yeshiva. All right? So, Reitz functions with the legal signature being President Joel, but there's no real Rosh Yeshiva. And the move was underway, and other balabatim said, why do we need an official Rosh Yeshiva? We never had an official Rosh Yeshiva. We'll declare Rabbi Shechter, Rabbi Rosenzweig, and there's a balance, you understand, it's a zug, it's balance. Because there are people who say Rabbi Shechter is too right-wing, Rabbi Rosenzweig too left, perfect. It's a perfect balance, you understand? Rabbi Rosenzweig is a Talmud of Baruch Lichtenstein, Rabbi Shechter, Talmud of the Rav, perfect balance. Other Balabatim said, and they evidently carried the day as far as I can see, what do we need a Rosh Yeshiva for? We never had a Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Belkin was not a Rosh Yeshiva either, and even though he bore the title, as we will see, Rabbi Rebel may have been the last Rosh Yeshiva in that sense of Ritz. But we got along since Rabbi Rebel in 1940 to 2020, we can get along another 1,000 years without an official Rosh Yeshiva. So the Rav gave a shiur. You know how many students he had at first? 20. 25 already was a big class. The Rav was not yet the Rav. I don't want to tell you what they called him in Yeshiva, what they still call him in Lakewood. That's what they called him in YU at the time. His initials, I don't want to say it, his initials. And it was not disrespectful, but he was a young hotshot, and they knew him by his initials. That's what they called him. But from that little classroom, he became the Rav. You understand? Didn't happen overnight. 40s into the 50s. I was privileged when I eulogized David. I said we had one thing in common. We both studied with two brothers at their prime. We both reached the brothers at their prime in life. I reached the Rav in 57, and he reached Reb Aaron in it was about 67 when he reached Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, and they were in their prime. The late 50s into the 60s, the Rav already is in his prime. Okay? He's the Rav. No one is going to call him by his initials outside of his detractors. And the Rav already is so big, and so his whole hashkafa, he has detractors. In my humble opinion, it did not bother him that much at all. He understood it's a different world. A different world. Lo dachi dachaykan, belo machshavayim machshavotaykan. And you can decide who is right, Lakewood, Vayu. Say that maybe they're both right. They're certainly not both wrong, that's for sure. Neither one had total success, and we need not elaborate. If you're up to date on all the headlines, you know what I'm talking about. Gentlemen, another candidate comes along who had dreams, and I have to tell you here, if I had not had an intimate, a few intimate conversations with this individual, I wouldn't believe it. But he considered himself a viable candidate, and I'll bring you proof that I'm absolutely correct. The name of the individual, Rabbi Joseph H. Luckstein. Now, Rabbi Luckstein, first of all, let's give years to put him into context. 1902, 1979. He was born 1 year before the Rav. The Rav was born, if I'm correct, 1903. Rabbi Luckstein was born in 1902. Rabbi Luckstein, born in Europe, came to America a little kid. His English ability made Abba Eben look like a lightweight. He had a gift with words. Pearls, they would say, came out of his mouth. And I'll tell you a story that a good friend of mine writes about in Washington. And I heard the story directly from the people involved. It's a fabulous story. Rabbi Kahn, any of you study with Rabbi Aaron Kahn, a Rebbe in YU, Rosh Yeshiva, anyone here? Anyone? So Alan, you know who I'm talking about. Rabbi Kahn makes a tremendous impression. Rabbi Lamb met him. He's not a YU person, but he did study with the Rav. He was part of that group that gathered around the Rav in the 80s, late 70s into the 80s. Command of English is fabulous, right or wrong. And Rabbi Lamb brings him to the yeshiva. And everyone is talking about Rabbi Kahn, new Rosh Yeshiva, and so brilliant. And Rabbi Joseph Luckstein invites him to speak for the Brotherhood at the most prestigious Orthodox congregation in the world outside of the State of Israel, Tehillat Jeshurun, KJ. And Rabbi Kahn announces his title, The Dialectics, Mashahu Kazeh, of Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. And about five people come out to the lecture. Rabbi Lichtenstein meets Rabbi Kahn a week or two later and says, I heard you got a very small crowd to your lecture. And Rabbi Kahn says, yes. And Rabbi Lichtenstein says, well, you made a very bad mistake. And Rabbi Kahn looks at him, what mistake? The title. You put up a title. That's not going to attract Balabatim from KJ. So Rabbi Kahn turns around and says to him, Rabbi Lichtenstein, what title would you have used? And Rabbi Kahn told me this. Without pausing a second, and like he's writing it in air, there is more to brisk than tea. Did you get it? Lipton's tea, the brisk tea? There is more to brisk than tea. Rabbi Lichtenstein raised in the bad areas of New York, saw Yiddishkeit at its worst, spoke time and again how in every shul he went to as a kid there was a spittoon. You don't even know what a spittoon is. I saw it. People in the middle of davening into the spittoon in the shul. He was raised and comes to Yeshivas of Eskol Chana and goes to Columbia University as a master's. More than anything, he marries the right girl. Gentlemen, marrying the right girl is crucial to life. And each of us can relate in this class, I know some of you well, the older people here at least. I know the women you married. Baruch Hashem, we all married the right girl. But nonetheless, why is she the right girl? All right, I can answer. I married the right girl. She let me do what I want. I could get away without making a living. We had some very, very hard years in the 70s into the 80s, which affects my family until today. I don't have one grandson in the rabbinate. Among them, I have Lamdonim, Mufhakim, Tzaddikim. They could be excellent Rebbeim. And each one gives me the same answer. Saba, we want to make a living. All right, they heard the stories. I had two full jobs, but I had two full jobs at a time that 80% of the money in Israel was black, and I worked, one check was the Jewish agency, one check the State of Israel, go and cheat on taxes. And remember, it was after the 73 war, when the war bonds, and automatically your salary evaporated in front of your eyes. So, Baruch Hashem, married the right girl. No? Rabbi Lichtenstein married the right girl. I knew her very well, by the way. She was the granddaughter of Ramaz. Ramaz, one of the most prominent Agudat HaRabbanim, Americanized rabbis. Rav Moshe Zvulun Margolis. Ramaz, the Roshei Teivot. When you married the Ramaz's granddaughter, he became the English-speaking assistant to Rabbi Ramaz already in the 1920s. He only becomes the rabbi of KJ when Ramaz dies. So you see, he raised strictly Orthodox world, but the East European world. He's repelled by that world. He marries Ramaz's granddaughter. He now comes to the Upper East Side. For the first time, you're facing Jews that are elegant, that have achieved, that have conquered America, that have savoir-faire. And from 1926 on, the day he was ordained by Rietz, Rabbi Lichtenstein's name is associated with Ramaz. By the way, in parentheses, just for the sake of historical accuracy, can anyone tell me who was the original assistant rabbi English speaker to Ramaz? Mordechai Kaplan. It's amazing. Mordechai Kaplan's first position was at the English rabbi assisting Ramaz at KJ. And Ramaz was idolized. He was a Europeish Rav, he was a Talmud Chacham. He had Hasidic inclinations. The Balabatim who made it in America but had their deep attachment to East Europe and to Torah, they idolized Ramaz. And Joe Lichtstein was his grandson. What he did in education is indescribable. He established a Hebrew teachers' college for women. Later that became Teachers Institute for Women, part of the greater Yeshiva University scene. Later it morphed into Stern College for Women. If you trace the history of Stern College, you got to go back to what Joe Lichtstein did in the 20s and into the 30s, way ahead of his time. His most famous achievement, Ramaz. When his grandfather-in-law died, the time was ripe. People were in mourning. I believe technically it's 1937 that Ramaz begins, and he opens a day school, which until today is one of the pace setters in the United States. Even the Rav looked up to Rabbi Lichtstein's Ramaz. Dignity, sophistication, Upper East Side. You can teach Shabbat, Kashrut, dedication. All right, you can be critical. The school didn't produce that many tzaddikim. It's interesting, with women, they had a lot more success than with men, but it had to do with the homes from which the students came as well. Today, Ramaz already is a lot more into the centrist world, I would say. But the Rav always praised Rabbi Lichtstein, how he could dignify Judaism. The Rav always spoke in terms of, he once described the Torah world as an old lady. And we have to take that old lady and put on a beautiful dress and give her makeup and put her into the center of the United States and let the people see Kezera Eva Kadesh. Or as I always say, Otag, I'm quoting modern Hebrew literature aphorism, Otag Geveret Bishinui Aderet. Our greatest challenge is to take Torah Hashem Tamim. It's that same lady that's been walking with us since Matan Torah, and put her into a modern dress. Otag Geveret Bishinui Aderet. It's very sharp. Or another expression, Hayadut Poshetet Tzura B'Loveshet Tzura. In every generation, we have to accommodate ourselves with the world in which we find ourselves functioning. We have to know how to do it, that the Torah remains whole, even if the outside veneer may be slightly different. And Rabbi Lichtstein succeeded. The Rav constantly spoke about Rabbi Lichtstein, about Ramaz, and he always made that point, the ability to take East Side Judaism, Bronzeville Judaism, Eastern European Judaism, Judaism with the spittoons, and succeed in placing it on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And now, I want to call your attention to a very, very insightful volume that I was responsible for getting it published. There's an individual named Victor Geller. Victor B. Geller. Vic Geller and Vic Snow share the same first name. But They're many years apart. Victor Geller is in his 90s today. He went to Talmudical Academy, fought in World War II. I believe he graduated Yeshiva College, if not City College. Graduate school, became very involved working for Yeshiva for many years, very successfully, a very insightful individual. What you call today Center for Jewish Future, CJF, was then called CSD, Community Service Division. And Vigello was in charge of rabbinic placement. He dealt with all the leaders of the yeshiva, all the famous names of the yeshiva, all the names we've mentioned, and he was a keen observer of the Orthodox world. Vic wrote a volume, Orthodoxy Awakens, The Belkin Era and Yeshiva University. By the way, what you're looking at on the cover is a Roy Albert picture of Rabbi Belkin, okay? I got Roy to give Vic some fabulous pictures. Now, I'm going to quote this book. I'll tell you what makes this book very valuable. It's a memoir. It's not a scholarly work. It's not something that you can compare to Revel or Silva or to the Rav, for that matter. It's a memoir, a total memoir. It's not a scholarly work, but it's a memoir with a lot of insight. And you can agree or disagree with Vic. Most of the time, I find myself totally agreeing with his insights. I knew the players, I knew them at a later stage in their lives, but I knew the players. Beginning on page 66, and we'll end off the class with this, he too talks about Rabbi Lookstein as a candidate. When Rabbi Lookstein told me he was a candidate, he should have been considered, yeshiva might have been better off, etc., etc., I took it with a grain of salt. Because one thing I learned in life, do your archival work before you interview anyone. Archives basically don't lie. But when you interview people, they're human beings, and everyone sees life through his own prism. This is why if you put 10 top students of the Rav together in this room and you'll ask them, tell us in 18 minutes, who was the Rav? You have 10 students, each speaking 18 minutes. You'll have a kiddush in the middle. Alan, you'll ask Stephanie to arrange a collation, break it up, fine. Believe it or not, you will get 10 different opinions of the Rav, even though these students sat at the Rav's feet at the same time, the same classroom. But that's human beings. Vic Geller, Taka tells us that Joe Lookstein was a candidate. And he compares, this is precious, he compares Rabbi Young to Rabbi Lookstein. Beginning on page 66, Rabbi Young came to America in 1919, into the Jewish Center in 1922. His penetrating eyes, imposing presence, and eloquent English became the hallmarks of a brilliant rabbinic career. Rabbi Joseph Lookstein was a thorough, quote, made in the USA, end quote, product of New York's teeming immigrant world. His below average height and portliness were forgotten as soon as he began to speak. And it's interesting, Rabbi Riskin is built exactly like Rabbi Lookstein. Sometimes if I see Rabbi Stephen Riskin, Shlomo Riskin, from behind, I think I'm looking at Rabbi Lookstein. It's very fascinating. There may be something to that build that gives you ability to be a magic speaker. His below average height and portliness as soon as he began to speak, whether it was an informal chat in his office or the presentation of Abba Ibn for an honorary degree at a yeshiva commencement, Lookstein's magnificent voice stilled all others. The sentences came out of his mouth like strings of perfectly matched pearls. The harsh, brutish life of his childhood ghetto was Max Luchstein's view of Orthodox Judaism. He saw both Jews and Judaism as victims of its inhumanity. He was determined to escape and take Orthodoxy with him. He was convinced, long before most, that both the Jewish people and their faith could flourish without compromise in a setting of gentility and good taste. Orthodox Judaism could and should live on Park Avenue. He succeeded brilliantly. Luchstein was a peerless preacher, a diligent pastor, a masterful supervisor, and a stolid exponent of Jewish tradition. Though his congregation included few fully observant families, his resolute leadership kept the Kehillat Jeshurun in the Orthodox camp. And I don't think anyone has ever said it better. I believe that this is a 99% correct portrait of the heart of who Joseph H. Luchstein was. He was something special. And he viewed himself as a candidate. And he had a lot going for him. Above all, what has the presidency of Yeshiva University become? President of Yeshiva University has to be a fundraiser. Rabbi Belkin had to raise millions. President Lamb had to raise hundreds of millions. President Joel has to raise billions. Just think. And Rabbi Luchstein had Balabatim. You have no idea. When you daven today in Kehillat Jeshurun, you are davening with hundreds of billions of dollars. The Balabatim there worth billions. This one, that, we have no idea who's davening. And by the way, it's a lot firmer today. In the 30s, into the 40s, into the 50s, who is from? Who is Shemesh Shabbos? What I told you yesterday. Who heard of Balei Tshuva? Who heard of halacha? Who heard of surrender? You had families from Eastern Europe with a folk attachment to Yiddishkeit. Charlie Liebman writes about it in his famous article, Zichrono Levracha, in his American Sociological Study of American Orthodox, the early 60s. The article that, if anyone wants a copy, I can give it to you, where I'm the case study, where it says young rabbi putting Aaron Rothkopf. He hits the nail on the head. Today, you have people, Shema Shabbos, people davening, people who are billionaires, who are makpid on kashrut, kala kocham, it's a different world today. But that was Rabbi Luchstein. Now, I believe he's fabulous here. He now compares Rabbi Luchstein and Rabbi Young. Remember, Rabbi Luchstein is the east side of Central Park. Rabbi Young is the west side of Central Park. The two rabbis were colleagues, but not friends. They were separated by more than Central Park. Each was the antithesis of the other. Of the west side, people would say, quote, that's the Jewish center. The rabbi's name is, it's Young. On the east side, they would say, that's Luchstein Shul. The name of the shul is Kehillat something. And wow. Rabbi Young was the spiritual leader of his congregation, not its director. He preferred to leave administration, finances, and all routine matters to others. In sharp contrast, Rabbi Luchstein exercised hands-on control of all aspects of his congregation and his building. No one would dream of hanging new wallpaper at Kehillat Jeshurun without his informed consent. Got it? Hits the nail on the head. Young was European. formality and subdued decorum dictated social relations, style was highly regarded. European, have you been to England lately? The Queen. Wow. Before you meet the Queen, you have to be briefed on etiquette by the people who direct the Queen's social calendar. This is Europe. Lookstein was American. Sound planning, active leadership, firm control, and solid results won his regard. It's a beautiful description. Gentlemen, you have a living portrait, Rabbi Young, Rabbi Lookstein. However, and I end off with this, whenever you talk about history, you're giving a lecture, popular lecture, don't have 120 years in the colloquium to take your time and do it properly. All you will hear people say in 41, 42, there were two candidates, Rabbi Young and Rabbi Soloveitchik. I heard Rakefet give a lecture, and he said there were two candidates, and it was a stalemate between them. Hey, wait a minute. I heard Rakefet in the Kollel way. He's under no time pressure. And there he gave a whole lecture on Joe Lookstein. Yes, he was a candidate. But it couldn't get off the floor. Because at that moment in time, to succeed Rabbi Revel, you needed someone who was a scholar. It was a different presidency. It's still the presidency that will carry forth with Rabbi Lamb. Rav was a Litvish Gaon. Rabbi Young was a German-English-Hungarian scholar. Both men had scholarly credentials. Rabbi Lookstein was a fabulous rabbi, a fabulous speaker, a magnificent planner, a man of vision. But the scholarship was not there. The scholarly credentials were not there. And those who supported him, and even Rabbi Lookstein, recognized his candidacy would not get off the floor. So while technically he was a candidate, but it's not Rabbis Young and Soloveitchik. Nevertheless, he's not a candidate, but he plays a major role in choosing the next president, and to a certain degree, the most dominant figure in the history of Yeshiva University, as far as what he achieved. And the truth of the matter is, Chazal made a person who was practically unknown, made him president. Chazal, Doctors Churgin, Chet, Dean Zar, Zion, Rabbi Lookstein, Lamed. And who was this person? Eli Wagner is related by Machen Tanimshaf. That's a word in Yiddish. Yiddish Machen Tanimshaf. Mechutan. Tafasta? Mechutan. Machen Tanimshaf. Eli Wagner is related. And that person becomes the center of our attention. And you can know him by two different names. Reb Shmuel Belkin / or Rabbi Dr. Samuel Belkin. My dear students, let me reiterate, what have we done today? I'll take attendance next week and I'll be very happy to welcome you into my class. It's like joining a credit card that has privileges and responsibilities. Responsibilities, remember, when you become my Talmud, you reflect me to a certain degree. So please, be a Musanik, be a Mensch, Teira v'yirat Shemayim, let it transform your entire personality. And if you can't listen to my final talk in the Kollel last June, and if you can't, come to Chashmonayim. I think it's the Tuesday evening after Rosh Hashanah. I'm giving a talk in Chashmonayim based upon the talk I gave in the Kollel, but adapted to the nitty-gritty of Israeli political, military, social existence at this moment in time. Another talk will be at the book launch, which I'll base upon a talk I gave in Lawrence that made a tremendous hit. So I want to redo it and recodify it and re-enhance it here in Israel, Be'ezrat Hashem. My dear students, what have we done today? We summarize many of last year's lectures, bringing you up to the point that Rav Moshe and Rabbi Revel die. It's a sad moment, a sad moment. People including students at Yeshiva, are so stupid that they think I knew Rabbi Revel. He died December 2nd. There's a book put out, My Yeshiva College Memoirs, and you'll see my memoir is in the section of the students who yet knew Rabbi Revel. They made me 100 years old to put me into that section. But Rabbi Revel died December 2nd, 1940. Beit Kislev. December 2nd, 1940, I turned 3 years old. By the way, Beit Kislev, Labriyut, is the yard site of Rabaron Kotler, and it's the yard site of Rav Moshe Aaron Paleyev. So three tremendous Marbitzei Torah on the American scene died at the same time. We now need a new president, and people have egos, they want a position. I'll come to it later, but I am convinced on the basis of my research and conversations with the greatest Soloveitchik family that the Rav wanted to be president. We spoke about Young, we spoke about the Rav. What we added today was one tremendous innovation, Joseph Fluckstein. And Joseph Fluckstein becomes very important because of Chazal. When Chazal see that there's a standoff, they choose a young man of promise who appears to be very flexible, manageable, can be controlled, and they turned their support behind this youngster. And let me tell you, there never was a stronger individual than Reb Shmuel Belkin. Chazal learned a great deal later in life, but we'll get there. Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we pick up exactly where we left off. The Sunday class picks up exactly where we left off. And amazing material with Reb Moshe, Reb Menashe Klein, Reb Moshe Bick, and Rakefet's thesis, the Machloket over the Erev in Brooklyn, defines their entire life of Pesach, and I'll prove it to you. What's coming up in the Sunday class, terrible material for the first time in the history of Responsa Literature, recording terror, murder threats, the machleket, the way we live as Orthodox Jews today, the infighting beyond comprehension, and it's documented. What we're going to spend part of the time on is dealing with the Erev in London, which raises a problem that we have never discussed. We didn't touch upon it until now. It doesn't come up in New York for reasons that I will explain. The problem of a kapof in an area like a park, where you can't build an Erev, it's not put there for humans to live in, etc., etc. Very fascinating material. Yitzchak, this is for you, and this is for you. That's the phone number you want. Morty, do me a favor. I saved this for Charlie. It's what we were exposed to that time, Hallel with musical instruments. So please save this for him. It's a collector's item. Now, is there anyone here who wishes to choke on the Satmar Rebbe and how he was saved and what went on. These are articles that appeared in tablet, and boy, it gets you very, very upset. Now, are you aware that an invoice has surfaced all over the internet from Z. Berman, who's a bookseller, it's now his nephew, I believe, I know him yet from the 50s, and he gets an order from, Carter, one of the biggest enemies, says, oh, from Mishal al-Swadadi, recruitment officer at Qatar Gaz, for the Yoel Moshe, an order for the Satmar Rebbe's volume. Here it is, documented. Now, I don't know what this means. Status declined. Evidently, they didn't want to put the order through because someone figured out where it's going. But could you imagine, in Carter, they're going to sit and learn the Yoel Moshe. Anyone wants it, it's yours. You don't have to believe me. It's documented. I got many copies were sent to me of it. Now, anyone interested in analysis of our government in Israel, a very interesting analysis that I have to say, more or less it's my own analysis of what happened in Gaza, why they stopped fighting, what they hope to achieve, what they can't achieve.
Who wrote it?
And it's written by someone knowledgeable. It's written by... Dror Eidar, and it was sent to me by my dear Talmud Rabbi Lieutenant Colonel Yedidja Atlas, who says, since Dror Eidar's article below almost mirrors my own analysis, I thought you'd find this interesting. Shavua Tov, Yedidja. If anyone wants it, it's yours. If anyone has any feeling for Chabad, this is a book put out by the Kramer family. I have a booklet. I taught many members of the family. Morty passed it back to that gentleman. If you want a copy, I'll make you a copy. It's not a problem. But he put up his hand first. We have to be mechabed him. And it's a very fascinating book on when the family first came to America. Now, does anyone here know Moshe B. Schwartz? Moshe B., the Talmud Moshe B. Schwartz. Not the original Moshe. Knew anyone from the Kollel know him? Do you know him? Yomo, he was here yesterday. Do me a favor, give him to see if he wants it. It's my material. He was looking for a topic for a master's. It's my material on the Satmar Rebbe, the question I raised, and how much ability we have to dashen the Gemara in a Hasidic way. Anyone interested in Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, anyone who's going to be in Chinuch, this is edited by my Talmud, Rabbi I.A. Weinberger, early years of BMT, long before the students of Reed sitting here were born. And it deals with the months of the summer, and from Iyar through Av, with all that you can teach children. Anyone going to Chinuch, these booklets are absolutely invaluable. My dear students, if there are no questions until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya, but I have to add, I'm looking forward this Yom Kippur to seeing the maidens in Jerusalem dancing in the vineyards and the unmarried few fellas in the kollel choosing wonderful wives, Be'ezrat Hashem, v'ken yehi ratzon.